Welcome to Ringside with Arif Dean, presented by Mile High Sports. I am your Avalanche beat writer for ColoradoHockeyNow.com, podcaster for Mile High Sports, coming to you Wednesday, January 1st, of course, the start of the new year, on the day after the Avalanche had what I would probably say is arguably their best win of the season over the Winnipeg Jets, defeating them 5-2 at Ball Arena in front of a sold-out crowd on New Year's Eve in a game where, quite frankly, Colorado was the better team pretty much from start to finish. There were obviously some factors in there that you need to consider. The Winnipeg Jets being on the second half of a back-to-back with travel. The Avalanche having 3 days off between games after having the 3 days or 4 days off for the holiday break. So not a lot of hockey played on the Avs' side. They finally had some days to have some practice. They finally had some time to kind of recoup and regather their guys. They made a trade. They had a guy come back from injury. Obviously, another guy go down with an injury, which we'll talk about. Against, of course, the Winnipeg Jets, where, you know, it's important to note Connor Hellebuyck was not the goalie in net. And it's also important to note that, obviously, you know, they were on a back-to-back, a team that was 0-3 on the second leg of a back-to-back. But in the grand scheme of things, you play the schedule ahead of you. And you know, had the tables been turned and the Avalanche were still looking for a win, if Winnipeg beat them, nobody would make excuses. The reality is, the schedule is what it is. I remember when the Avalanche were in Detroit back on December 7, I talked to Jared Bednar that night about the fact that Colorado had to play Detroit and then was in New Jersey the very next night. And you know, how you're going to deal with the goalie situation, the roster, the minutes for guys like Makar and MacKinnon. And he mentioned something along the lines of, it seems like every year when we play the Devils, which is true, it's just some kind of a scheduling thing that keeps happening. But he said, it seems every year when we play the Devils, we're always coming in on the second day of a back-to-back with travel, and they're rested and at home. So it gets you sometimes. Sometimes it benefits you, sometimes it doesn't. The Avalanche are, as you know, since 2020, the best team in back-to-backs. The second leg of a back-to-back, nobody's better than them. So the Winnipeg Jets, 0-4. They've had Eric Comrie start every single one after yesterday's loss, where Comrie only let in 3 goals. Colorado had their, what I like to call, hitting their quota with the empty nets now, 2 per game. And they came away with a big, big win. It was a massive victory for the Avs. They improved to, I want to say, 10-8 at home. They're 13-7 on the road. It's a big game for the Avs against a team that they're going to play 2 more times here in the next 3 weeks in the month of January. And they're going to get the entire season series out of the way. And Colorado, as we saw last year in the playoffs, and as we saw on November 7th when they were playing with a shorthanded roster with Alexander Georgiev still here, they lost 1-0 to Connor Hellebuyck and the Jets. They always play them well. That was probably my favorite game of the season in terms of, you know, back and forth chances and opportunities. And given the fact that it was less than a month into the year, it was kind of a breath of fresh air after all the sloppy hockey that you have in October. So let's get into the game a little bit. And I do want to touch on a few things. We're going to get to the injury later, but I do want to touch on a few things to start. For starters, Casey Mittelstadt. You know what? Let's just get into the injury now because it kind of relates to what happened with Mittelstadt. So Val Nichushkin's out with a lower body injury. The Avalanche today announced that Oscar Olausson was getting recalled from the Colorado Eagles, which is not good news. Oliver Shillington has been placed on IR retroactive to November 27. And Oscar Olausson is making his way up from the AHL. It's not good news because it means the Avalanche need another forward. And if they need another forward, it means Val Nichushkin's going to not play on Thursday. So it's not a guarantee. It could be some kind of thing where it's, you know, strictly precautionary. But obviously, none of that is guaranteed right now. What we do know is Val played his last shift with 4 minutes left in the second period. And did not return. In that game, right around his last shift, Val was skating up the ice. He crossed center ice. He got into the Winnipeg zone, crossed the blue line, and chipped the puck in, dumped it in behind the net. And just as he did that, he took an elbow to the head from Logan Stanley up against the glass. And he kind of let the refs have it on his way out because there was no penalty called. And then we never saw him in, you know, the rest of the second. We didn't see him in the third period. It kind of felt like that was the thing that led to the injury. But then we, you know, we got an update from the Avalanche during the intermission or coming out for the third period that it was an upper body injury. And then we asked Jared Bednar post game. He confirmed it was an upper body. Someone even went as far as asking if that elbow had anything to do with the injury, and he said no, it was something else. So it was a little bit of a strange turn of events. I don't know what else it could have been. Maybe he pulled a muscle or something. I read some tweets on Twitter about it. I don't remember quite when it could have happened. But losing Nichushkin is bad news. No way around it. You missed him when he was out of the lineup. He's just started to get his legs under him. He's been unbelievable. I think it took him, what, 3 games to figure things out? And then since then, he's just been on a roll. He's got 11 goals and 6 assists. So his first 3 games, he didn't have a point. Last night, he didn't have a point. He only played 11:54 before leaving with injury. In the 17 games in the middle, casual, 11 goals, 6 assists, 17 points. So this is a guy coming off a 6-month suspension, didn't get to have a training camp, barely got to practice with his team in that green jersey before he joined them. Point per game guy, 11 goals in 17 games. Like, just an unbelievable talent, huge part of this team. Obviously, we can go on and on about what he does in terms of the PK, the PP. If you guys remember, if you follow my work on ColoradoHockeyNow.com, and if you don't, you should. There was a stretch where he wasn't playing all that much, and not necessarily not playing all that much, but when he started, there was a lot of 16 minutes in there, and 18 minutes, and a 17 minutes, and maybe a 19 here and there. And I remember I wrote in one of my post games that I'd love to see Val get up over 20 minutes per night consistently, because that's where he belongs. And over the last month or so, since that game in New Jersey, coincidentally, he was the best player on the ice in Detroit. If I remember correctly, he had a goal that game. He was great, but he only played 17:53. Ever since then, he had 20 in New Jersey, 20 in Pittsburgh, 20 in Utah. Then he played only 16:55 versus Nashville. That was a game that the Avalanche won before the third period. And then 22 in Vancouver, 23 in San Jose, 21 in Anaheim, 22 against Seattle, 21 in Utah. Like, he was up over 20 every single game. He had that 4-game goal scoring streak, a lot of PK time, 5 shots, 4 shots, 3 shots. He's putting up a ton of shots on goal now. He's being the Val that we know him to be. So the Avalanche lose him. And this was the first game where they had their top six back, because Jonathan Drouin returned from a 16-game injury absence, which, for the second time this season, Drouin has missed 16 games. He played opening night. He missed 16 straight. He came back for 4, went back on the injured reserve, missed 16 more, came back yesterday, had 2 assists. Obviously, one of them was on the empty net. The other one, I believe, was a secondary assist. But it was just Drouin getting him back. You were able to kind of see more of what the Avalanche could bring offensively. And, you know, they've been one of the best offensive teams in the NHL this year. So you get him back. Instead of playing him in a top six role where Casey Mittelstadt's the center, the Avalanche are finally kind of like at wit's end with the Casey Mittelstadt slump. They dropped him to the fourth line. The third line, Parker Kelly centering Logan O'Connor and Joel Kiviranta. Nobody's touching that line. Nobody wants to touch that line, and that's the right move. They shouldn't mess with that line at all. But ideally, looking ahead toward the trade deadline and then toward the playoffs, because it is January now, like, things are going to rush on by, and it's going to be here before we know it. You want that line to be your fourth line. You want Parker Kelly centering Logan O'Connor and Joel Kiviranta on the fourth line. You want your top nine to be 3 lines stronger than that. Right now, what do you have? You have McKinnon, you have Rantanen, you have Drouin, you have Mittelstadt, you have Nichushkin, you have Lehkonen, you have Ross Colton. 7, shoo-in, 100%. These guys are in your top seven. Are 7 of your top 9. You also have a little bit of a wild card in Miles Wood. You have an even bigger wild card. It's the wildest of cards in Gabriel Landeskog. And then you also have Juuso Pärssinen. So you're starting to get some depth there, but it still feels quite a bit like an unfinished product. I still think the Avalanche are going to go out and get one more forward. I still think if he's healthy before March 7th, Miles Wood is going to be involved in a trade. If he's healthy, if he's not healthy, and if it's something that GMs are not willing to risk at this point, it'll be an offseason move. But the Avalanche are going to shake things up a little bit. Now, with Drouin coming back, the Avalanche put him on the second line. He had Arturi Lehkonen on the right wing, and it was Ross Colton at center. That was Colorado's second line. They had Val Nichushkin up on the top line with, or sorry, I need to make sure that those were the lines. I feel like Val was on the second line. No, yep. So it was Lehkonen on the first line. Sorry. So it was Lehkonen and Val playing with McKinnon per usual, and it was Colton centering Drouin and Mikko Rantanen. I knew something was off there. Suddenly, you lose Val. Once you lose Val, Mikko gets the upgrade. It's Mikko playing with Nate and Lehkonen. And then Drouin and Colton are both on the wing. Here comes Casey Mittelstadt to center the second line. Here comes Casey Mittelstadt to score the game-winning goal in the third period against the Winnipeg Jets in my opinion, the biggest game of the year. I've been hyping this up since the day after Christmas. I've been saying the Avalanche got to get a big win on New Year's Eve. I didn't know they'd win every game leading up to it, which obviously from then on was just the Utah one. But they looked pretty damn good, and it was a huge game and a well-deserved win. So Casey Mittelstadt breaks through. Was he playing his best hockey? No, not yet. But sometimes, like, the reality of these guys is, and this is very clear with Mittelstadt because he said it, the coach has said it, they're openly admitting, Mittelstadt is struggling with confidence. There's a big thing there that's causing him to grip the stick a little tighter and not be the guy that, you know, he was in the beginning of the season when you saw him have, in my opinion, he was one of the best players in training camp. Comes out of camp and he's unbelievable. Like, he's, I think it was 13 points in the first 10 games. Key piece of the top power play. His wingers were the likes of Kiviranta, O'Connor, Callum Ritchie, Nikolai Kovalenko. Like, he wasn't playing with stars. It was always McKinnon getting the guys that are healthy. And when somebody would drop with an injury, Ross Colton was shifted to the wing, and he even jumped up to play with McKinnon. Mittelstadt was always getting kind of like the leftovers of the top six. But he was still producing, and he was still a key piece of the power play. And I'll never forget, after the 10-game mark, I asked Jared Bednar about Mittelstadt having such a great season, and how are you excited to see when Val gets back, when Lehkonen gets back? You know, at the time, maybe even Landeskog coming back. Are you excited to see him play with top talent? He's like, yeah, like, the sky's the limit. He's going to take the next step. And it went completely the other way. Valeri Nichushkin, Ross Colton, Arturi Lehkonen, last few games, Mikko Rantanen. Nothing has helped get him out of the slump. The confidence has been shot. And that's a key part of this. So scoring a goal when you have a slump like that is huge, especially when it's not some garbage time goal. It's a 2-2 game against the Winnipeg Jets, and it is a massive goal. So having him get that one, I think, is the best case scenario. It's not the best case scenario that you lost Valeri Nichushkin for him to even get upgraded back to the top six. But, you know, when you lose a guy and someone needs to step up, it may as well be the person that you were sending a message to, because the message was sent, the message was received, and he ended up with the game-winning goal. So I'm really curious to see where it goes from here for him. I think the lines are going to stay the way they are. With Ross Colton being healthy and Val Nichushkin being out, you still have a clear-cut top six. But now the bottom six, it's going to go back to just being a little bit of a struggle here. You know, Juuso Parsonen and Yuri Inala are two parts of it. Now Ivan is out week to week. Now you're adding Oscar Olausson. So it's going to be tough, because if that's your fourth line, if Parsonen is centering Inala and Olausson, the new guy that you just acquired 5-6 days ago, along with two AHLers that are not going to be anywhere near the NHL roster come playoff time, unless you are just completely hammered with injuries, you have a problem. So those guys are probably not going to see a lot of ice time, and it's unfortunate. But having Mittelstadt play the way that he should be playing and having him kind of come out of this and break through this rut is going to be massive for this roster, because now they need him. Now it's no question. You know, they don't have the luxury of saying, we're going to send a message to you by dropping you down to the fourth line because Ross Colton can center Val and Mikko. That's not an option anymore. And how long is it not going to be an option? Who knows? And I say this not even guaranteeing that Val's going to miss a game, but it just kind of seems like it's going that way. The Avalanche were supposed to practice on January 1st. I guess they called an audible because we got an email post-game that they were not practicing. So that's where we are with Casey Mittelstadt. That's where we are with the Val Nichushkin injury. There's a few more things I wanted to talk about. Number one, Arturi Lehkonen. Lehkonen was unbelievable against Winnipeg. He was just getting his ass beat in the crease every single shift, but in a good way, because he was in there challenging those bigger guys, the Logan Stanleys, the Neil Pionks, the Josh Morrisseys, and he was taking a beating, but he kept going back to it. His goal, the opening goal, he literally got like kneed and cross-checked, or not kneed, but like Stanley used his leg to push Lehkonen off of him and then like cross-checked him down to the ice. And as he's falling forward, gets a stick on that Josh Manson shot, redirects it past Eric Comrie to make it 1-0. So I just absolutely loved seeing Arturi Lehkonen do his thing, because you're starting to see him pick his game up and you're starting to see why the Avalanche are a dangerous threat that they are. Like, this team, no matter what happens each season, while they have this core and while their core is playing the way that they are, you can't ignore them as a cup contender. That's just the reality of the situation. The next game will be Arturi Lehkonen's 27th. 27 games is the 1/3 point of a season. Obviously, Arturi missed the first 12, so he's not going to play a full season. He's only eligible to play 70 games this year if he plays every single one the rest of the way. But in less than 1/3 of a season, if he has no points in the next one against Buffalo, which I find hard to believe, he is going to go into the 1/3 point of an 82-game season with 20 points and 14 goals. Extrapolate that over 82 games, technically 81 games, it would be 42 goals, 18 assists, 60 points. Pretty damn good for this guy. 21 minutes and a half against the Winnipeg Jets, obviously, with Val being out. He played a lot of those big minutes at the end. He was under 20 for the last three games before that. But this is a guy that the Avalanche are using this year as much as they possibly need to, and deservedly so. When they first acquired him in 2022, he was a 16-minute-per-night player in the regular season before getting a little bump in the playoffs. 20-27 per game the following year. Last year, 18-28 per game. This year, way the hell up. 21 minutes and 47 seconds per game for Arturi Lehkonen in 26 games after missing the first 12, missing training camp. Just came in and just continued to be the guy that he always has been. So, love seeing that for Lek. Love seeing him kind of do his thing. I just wanted to give him a little bit of a shout out because it is very much deserved. He also played 22-11 in the playoffs last year, so he's been around that 21-47 to 22-11 mark since the postseason. And again, much deserved for the type of player that he is. Moving on, Josh Manson was unbelievable. I loved the way that he was confident. And yes, everybody's unbelievable. Everybody played great. I'm sorry if that sounds like a bit of a habit with this podcast, but it was a huge win against a good Winnipeg team. Josh Manson, I loved the confidence that he had in those shots, getting them on goal, both of them being redirected. The first one, Lehkonen, the second one, Mittelstadt. Having him back in the lineup is huge because he fits. The Sam Molinsky, Sam Girard thing didn't work. And then Jared did the flip where he put Girard with Kale and he put Devon Taves with Molinsky. And it was apparent why he did that, because the Sam and Sammy thing wasn't working. So nice to have Josh Manson back. It kicked Molinsky back down to the third pair with Keaton Middleton. And Josh Manson was great to assist in a game where he was a key piece of it. He wasn't the only defenseman, obviously, that played a part. Devon Taves had a goal that he 100% didn't mean to score it the way he did, fanned on the puck, and then it just kind of went under Eric Comrie. But you take him any way you can, and when you've only had one goal all season, that's the kind of goal that could be a bit of a slump buster, very similar to Casey Mittelstadt. Taves has been picking it up. He's been really great. I was going to say unbelievable, but I'm trying to change the verbiage here a little bit. He's been really great defensively lately. You're seeing him kind of play a really good 200-foot game. Just in time over a month away from the Four Nations faceoff. You want to see the best out of Devon Taves. I'm Canadian, so I really do. Leading into that tournament. So shout out to Keaton. Shout out to Devon Taves. Shout out to Josh Manson. Shout out to Keaton Middleton. I like seeing him in his limited minutes. Speaking of Keaton Middleton, the fact that the Avalanche keep playing him, you know, Bednar said post-game, if somebody struggles, you know, you got to fight for your ice time. And I guess he was trying to hint that he didn't like something about Calvin DeHaan's previous game. Keaton Middleton draws in. But the fact that they keep playing this guy And nothing against him. He's done an admirable job in his limited minutes. But the fact that they keep playing Middleton says to me that Colorado is going to make an effort to bring in a guy like that at the trade deadline. You know, I wrote about this a few weeks ago in regards to Josh Manson. I remember when EJ was part of the top four for the entire regular season of the cup year, then the Avs went out and got Josh Manson and kicked EJ down the lineup. Is that going to happen again with Josh, like where Josh Manson is now going to be the one getting kicked down the lineup? I don't know. I don't think so. But right now, the Avalanche, they have a top four that they can play a lot, and they have a third pair that they can barely play. And that's not usually been the case because they've always had Bo and Byram on that third pair. They've always had five strong defensemen. So they've always had three pairs that they can play a lot. So whether Manson gets kicked down to the third pair or not, I still do have a feeling that Colorado is going to go out and get a big minute munching defenseman who can play a physical game, because the way they're playing Keaton Middleton makes me think that. You know, I've heard a lot of insiders play matchmaker. They've talked about Ivan Provorov. He would be a good fit. He wouldn't obviously satisfy the big giant behemoth defenseman or the guy that plays a physical game like Josh Manson, or like what you're getting out of Middleton. But he's kind of up the alley of that kind of acquisition of bringing another minute muncher so that you have five solid defensemen that on any given night you can trust playing 20 minutes. So we'll see what happens there as we get closer to the trade deadline, which is, you know, 8 or 9 weeks away now. I want to say 9 weeks away now. I'll start to speculate more and get more into who they should acquire, who might get traded. Me thinks one of the defensemen is going to get shipped off. Because he's an asset. We'll get into all that later. So, I'm not talking about Gerard. So that's just a little nugget on Keaton Middleton and hit ice time. Last thing I want to end with is something that I've talked about quite a bit recently. It's Mackenzie Blackwood. It's the attitude of Mackenzie Blackwood. It's the personality of Mackenzie Blackwood. It's the morale of Mackenzie Blackwood. And most importantly, it's the on-ice performance in the game of one Mackenzie Blackwood. Blackwood, for the sixth game with the Avalanche since getting traded or being acquired by them, let in less than 3 goals in a game. He won for the fifth time. He's 5-1 with the Avs. He's got a .936 save percentage, 2 goals. He only faced 23 shots, 2 goals against. That's his limit. First 4 games, 2 goals against. Game number 5 against Utah, 1 goal against. Game number 6 against Winnipeg, 2 goals against. It's really funny to me, by the way, that we are at a point with Blackwood now. We are at a point with the Avalanche goaltending that letting in 2 goals, yes, I know it was only 23 shots, but letting in 2 goals drops your save percentage. Because, and only with the team, not for the full season, but only with the team. Blackwood was a .940 coming into this game. He lets in 2 goals. The Avalanche win 5-2. He drops to a .936. That's how good he's been. That's how, like, unreal his numbers are and how difficult it's going to be to maintain. And the reality is he's not going to maintain a .936, .940. If he does, put him in the Vezina Trophy conversation, which is something that I wrote about on Monday. People thought I was going crazy. Maybe I am, but the question wasn't to put Blackwood in the conversation. It was how long and what would it take for him to start to be included in the conversation, not to win the thing. Connor Hellebuck, to me right now, shoe-in favorite to retain that thing and win it for the second year in a row. But Mackenzie Blackwood, full season, he's now up to a .917 save percentage. You know, there's a scenario where he keeps on winning. There's a scenario where full season, the Avalanche have, I believe it's 43 plus 41, 44 games left. There's a scenario where he plays 29 of those games. And there's a scenario where he wins 19 or 20 of them. And if that's the case, he's got a 30-win season. He's probably up at our .920 save percentage. Right now he's at a .917, so shouldn't take that much to get him there. And you're talking about a guy who is probably top 5 in the NHL in wins, continues to be top 5, if not top 3, in save percentage, and should be in that conversation. But the biggest thing that I want to talk about was Blackwood postgame, and my favorite thing about these goalies continues to be just how damn jolly and fun they are to be around. Blackwood and Wedgwood, like, man, I can't say enough how much Chris McFarland hit this damn thing out of the park. Like, these are two unbelievable guys who have chemistry, who've played together, who enjoy each other's presence, who are excellent, excellent in terms of hyping each other up. Like, that matters so much with a goaltender. The reason why Pavel Francouz was such a fan favorite was because he was just like a salt of the earth, nice guy, which has kind of been the theme with the backup goalie, because that's how I would describe Scott Wedgewood. But on top of that, Frankie wanted to play. He wanted to win. And when he was called upon, he played and he won. And he always wanted to be in the crease because he's a competitor. He's a professional athlete. He's a champion. He wants to be that guy. He swept Leon Draisaitl, Connor McDavid, and the Edmonton Oilers. He did it. But at the same time, he understood his role. He never let it be an issue. Whether it was Philip Grubauer, whether it was Darcy Kemper, whether it was Alexander Georgiev, Frankie knew, I'm the backup. When I'm in goal, I'll do everything in my power to make myself an option. And if you all remember in 2020 before COVID, my first season on the beat, his numbers were far greater than Philip Grubauer's in the regular season before the pause. But he knew he was the backup, and that was the most important thing, because what that did was it removed any possibility for issues. We've heard Georgiev. We've heard Georgiev, you know, talk about he's a different kind of competitor. He was a backup in New York that, you know, when he got traded here, and it kind of sounds crazy to hear it now, and I'm not saying this to pile on the guy. I'm really not, because I do love his honesty. When he got traded here, he was very open with us about how, you know, he was the heir to the Henrik Lundqvist throne, and he was playing great, and he was the backup, he said. And then they brought in Shesterkin and just forgot about me. And we're talking about Igor Shesterkin, the guy that just signed the largest NHL goalie contract in NHL history. Georgiev felt, well, this guy came in and just took my spot without really, you know, giving me an opportunity to battle him for it. He was just the prodigy, which he was, like, understandably so from the Rangers. But Georgiev had that confidence in him and that mindset in him to say, I'm not a backup. I need to be somewhere where I can be the starter. What made Frankie a fan favorite was the opposite, was because this was a backup caliber goalie who played backup goalie minutes and was okay with it while still having that fiery, competitive, you know, demeanor to him that professional athletes have and, you know, champions have, like he is now. So you have that in Scott Wedgewood, and you have that with him playing with a guy he's played with before, he's backed up with before, he's been on the same team with before twice, because if you look at Wedgewood's career, he started in New Jersey, went to Arizona, back to New Jersey, back to Arizona before the Dallas and Nashville stints. So he left New Jersey, went to Arizona, came back, Blackwood's still there. Hey, what's up, buddy? Nice to see you again. 5 or 6 years later, whatever the hell it is, I don't have it pulled up in front of me. One of them gets traded to Colorado. The other one follows 9 days later. Hey, welcome back. We're doing this again. So those guys, seeing them in the locker room, just speaking and joking after every win and just having a great time is so great. I loved when I got in there, Blackwood was taking off his pads and he's screaming to the room. I think it was Malinsky, Keaton Middleton. Oh my God, guys, I didn't even see the puck in the third period. I didn't even have to do anything. I didn't have to do any work, to the point where he kept saying it. Obviously, he's smiling, he's having a great time, and he's complimenting his teammates. Arturi Lehkonen finished taking off his equipment and was heading to the, you know, to the showers, and walks by him and goes, okay, quit complaining, we made it easy for you. And he's like, they just started having a good laugh about it, and he goes, oh my God, you guys are so good. So he's just such a positive, high morale guy. Like, I didn't get to see a lot of EJ in the locker room, unfortunately. I did that last year in 2023, and it reminds me of that. But obviously, there were 2 years where COVID was kind of put a pause on everything. And my first season on the beat, it lasted 60 games before COVID took us out of the rooms for 2.5 seasons. So I only got to see EJ in that 2023 season, his last one with the Avalanche, where he was not, you know, he was a shell of the guy that he was when he was a key piece of the team. And even the year before in the cup year, he was a shell of that person too. And understandably so, he's a lot older now in his NHL career. But I get a little bit of that vibe from Mackenzie Blackwood, and it's unbelievable. I love, and there I am using that unbelievable word again. I love what Blackwood brings to that locker room on top of doing it on the ice, on top of going out there winning games, making saves. I love the way he tracks the puck. I love the way he follows the play. He's becoming like an instant hit in this lineup, in this roster. And there are still a lot of national media and people kind of questioning the contract. Why did the Avalanche rush into this? Who are you, you know, who are you negotiating against? Like, you didn't need to give him that money. But I think from the Avalanche standpoint, from through and through, that was the right move. Lock this damn guy up. Lock your guy up. We talked about it on the previous podcast. I don't need to get it again, but I can't speak volumes to how much I'm learning about this guy each day on and off the ice, and how much I think the Avalanche 1,000,000% just knocked it out of the park. So shout out to Chris McFarland for that. Shout out to Mackenzie Blackwood. Buffalo Sabres are in town. I'm going to assume that that's going to be the Scott Wedgwood game. You might even say Wedgwood get two starts in a row. But I would assume over the next five games, Buffalo goes to Wedgwood. I don't think he'll actually get two starts in a row. I think Saturday against Montreal and Monday against Florida will both be Blackwood. Wednesday at Chicago, Wedgwood. And then Thursday the following night at Minnesota, Blackwood. And then Blackwood against Winnipeg, and then the Rangers, Wedgwood. So you're getting into a stretch now where it's going to be Wedgwood one game, Blackwood two, Wedgwood one game, Blackwood two, you know, for a little bit here for the next seven or eight games. That's just my prediction, obviously. But I can't speak volumes to what this guy means to the roster. Like, I really wish it was possible for you guys to get that looking in the locker room, but I want to provide as much of that as I can, because it truly, truly has been a change. It's like here's a little behind the scenes thing. JJ Jerez, as you've seen, he's taken a little bit of time off from Gorilla Sports in terms of being there in the day to day. So he hasn't been in the locker room for a little bit. And I keep texting him every day. You guys know JJ Jerez. He's a goalie guy. And I keep texting him every day, like, man, I can't wait for you to meet these goalies. Like, it's completely changed the demeanor of everything in there. And it's not an over-exaggeration. Like, these guys are just so fun to be around. And, of course, that's aside from the more important part, that they're producing. They're performing. They're doing what they got to do. They're stopping the puck. The Avalanche are playing the Sabres tomorrow. When they played them on December 5th or whatever the hell it was, after that first period where Georgiev let in four goals and eight shots, I don't have the number in front of me, but Colorado has the best save percentage in the NHL by a mile. So from the moment Georgiev got pulled for the last time in his Avalanche career until today, Colorado's got the best save percentage. Blackwood has played six of those games. Wedgwood has played around five or six as well. Georgiev had the one start in Detroit, and shout out to him. He was great in that game. I give him all the credit in the world. He was really great against the Red Wings. You got the Sabres tomorrow. There's still a team that's below you in the standings. You can beat them. Extend this winning streak to six games and continue on the path toward, like Bednar said yesterday, like Devon Toews said yesterday, catching Winnipeg is still in the equation. We're not, you know, we're game 38. Colorado wants to win the division. They want to always, always have the best possible record they can. And right now they're showing why they can be that team. So let's put an end to the show here. Another 33 minutes for you guys on a Wednesday night, January 1st. Feels like a Saturday because everything is all weird with the holidays. If you made it this far in the podcast, bless your pretty little heart. Don't forget to follow me on X/Twitter at RunRightArif. Subscribe to ColoradoHockeyNow.com. Subscribe to this podcast, Mile High Sports Podcast, on Apple, Spotify, wherever. Leave me a 5-star rating. Leave a review. If you made it this far in the podcast, bless your pretty little heart. Let's make hockey for everyone, and we out you.